From NPR News, this is News in Notes. I'm Tony Cox. The holiday season is certainly a time of giving, but presents aren't the only gifts that you can give. For those who are struggling this Christmas, they need the most precious gift of all, time. Luckily, there are some selfless people who give up Christmas at home to help those in need. One of them is Kenny Lange. He has spent the last 10 years giving his time to the Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, and he joins us here today in studio. Kenny, welcome to News and Notes.
Thank you so much.
So, you know, giving is something that we all know about doing, but giving in the way that you give seems to be special. What was it that struck your heart that said, I need to do more than normal?
Right. Well, you know what? I think initially what I try to learn from is death. And I say that in the sense that I lost my grandfather about 10 years ago. And it was through his passing that I was motivated to kind of encourage other people and to actually give a little bit more. Just of myself and my time, and I decided to join Children's Hospital Los Angeles.
And what made you decide to pick that particular place as opposed to any other place where you could give?
Well, that's a good question. I think personally for me, it was the watching my grandfather pass away with cancer kind of really touched my spirit and my soul, and just seeing how, you know, he evolved and his illness kind of evolved kind of just sparked me into just working with kids, you know, with various illnesses.
Now, do you work specifically with children who have cancer?
Various. I'm a TLC volunteer, which is Tender Loving Care volunteer. I generally work in the playrooms, but primarily I can go floor to floor, room to room, you know, throughout the hospital.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, Children's Hospital is the one where they have pets that you can bring in, and they have these different play areas, and it's, you kind of travel from one area to another, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
What is the feeling? Describe it for us.
Wow.
When you first go in and you really see that, wow, I'm doing something valuable here.
Right. Well, I'd have to say for me, it is the whole piece is just an experience. One that when you pull into the parking lot, you see, you know, the lights and everything from the hospital. You see the big Children's Hospital sign and logo. You go into the parking lot, and it's just beyond, just everything in you. You have like an inner strength that just comes and just takes over. And as soon as I walk through the door, I transform into just Kenny the volunteer. All personal issues or personal problems seem to dissipate. Work, you know, anything that I could possibly be going through, you know, bills, whatever it is, all that just stays in the car, basically. And when I go in, you just transform into this strong-willed person.
You know, anyone who's ever worked in a hospital, and I include myself in that, knows that while there are rewards in helping people, there are also challenges because you are confronted with life's misery.
Yes.
Over and over and over again. How do you cope with that?
You know what? I just my belief system is really strong. My mom was very motivating. My parents were both motivating to me. And I often would get asked the question, you know, if I would lose a kid, and I've lost several kids, people would say, how do you do that? How do you do that? And I think once I started on that path and I saw how, you know, just my presence with sitting with a child watching TV or walking them downstairs to the McDonald's in the hospital and getting them an ice cream cone, how much that really means to them, the look on their face just makes it all worthwhile. And then it poses the question, how can you not do it? So, you know, it definitely is life-changing. And dealing with, you know, like I said, with death also teaches us how to live in the present moment and just be happy with what we have.
Let me ask this, and there's no way to make it not sound as if it's sort of weird. Let me just ask it like this. It's great what you do at holiday time, but why not do this all the time throughout the year?
Right. Well, actually, I do.
Do you really?
Which is good, yeah. I am a regular volunteer at Children's Hospital, and I actually started prior to my work at the hospital. I worked at a major studio for a while, and my volunteer hours at the hospital kind of transformed my whole thinking, my whole line of, of life, and I ended up changing my career and taking up a career working with kids. So I not only volunteer in my spare time, but I work with emotionally disturbed kids in full time.
So you gave up a career in Hollywood to become a volunteer full time?
Not necessarily a volunteer, but I still do that component of it. But I gave up that particular career to work with children. So now I'm getting paid to work with children, but I also volunteer on the side.
All right, so you change your vocation in a sense. Are you single?
Yes, at this time.
Could you do this, do you think, with a wife and children?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you find that it's hard to explain to people who you are close to, either colleagues at work in your previous line of work or friends, about the rewards of this? And are they afraid that if they get too close, you're going to pull them in to do the same kind of volunteering that you're doing?
Yeah, I have seen that a couple times. But I think generally, you know, everybody is built with a genuinely kind heart. Ultimately, and I think they ultimately see how it affects me, and those that, you know, love me can see what brings me joy. And then also, I know it's not for everybody, because I know, you know, going to a hospital and seeing kids and, you know, not understanding what the IVs mean and what the monitors mean and all of that stuff can be a little intimidating, and, you know, can kind of push people away because they don't really want to get involved in that. However, it's kind of done the opposite for me.
Really? What would you say is the difference in Kenny Lange 10 years ago, before you started doing this, and Kenny Lange, who is sitting here in front of me today, smiling?
Smiling. I would say my life now, I'm much more happier. I'm much more happier. I think I did exactly what I was supposed to do within the 10 years that I've been there. I did hit a bunch of walls, you know, with losing various kids here and there. But like I said, I think generally it's knowing that I'm making a difference in the life of a child.
Really? Why do you think people don't do more of this, Kenny?
You know what? I think it, as far as from the hospital standpoint or working with kids that have illnesses, I think it is that component, that fear, of having loss. And I think that generally people don't want to experience any more loss than what we already experience kind of on a day-to-day basis, even with our just general lives and regular families. So to kind of add another component to that, you know, is kind of intimidating, and most people may not want to do that. However, there's some generous people out there that would rather contribute financially or, you know, donate some toys or whatever, where they don't have to actually see the kids. You know,
well, let's do a public service right now.
All right.
Let's give people an idea how they can, A, become more involved, and how they can get their families more involved in volunteering in this way, especially at this time of year.
Okay. Well, I'm sure on the Children's Hospital website, you can go there, and there's so many different ways that you can volunteer. Even with volunteering like I do, I work in the playrooms generally, and I go room to room to visit the kids that may need some extra attention or whatever. But there's various other ways that you can volunteer. You can volunteer to work at a reception table in the hospital, where you don't have the one-on-one contact with the kid or kids. And you can also have toys donated to the hospital. You can, you know, start, you know, do like a food drive or a toy drive and donate those toys to some kids at the hospital.
Now, did you say you had that your family, I know that you're single now, but did you say that your family is involved in this?
Yeah, to an extent. As far as the support and nurturing, yeah. I actually I raised a foster son that I've had for quite a few years. And based on him being with me, I actually got him involved with working at the hospital as well. And he goes with me every Christmas Eve / Christmas Day to pass out the toys.
Do you have to be a certain kind of person in order to do this and do it well and get satisfaction from it?
You know what? I don't think so. I think that it could just be anybody. Anybody that genuinely wants to, that inner feeling of just feeling complete and feeling love, basically. When you feel the love with inside, then ultimately it's easier to kind of give to other people and to do this type of work. And I think it's a component that we're all built with.
You've done it for 10 years. Can you do it for 10 more?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is this season any more difficult or any different than any of the previous ones? And I ask that because of the economic climate that has, you know, engulfed the nation and people
right,
feeling.
So many people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say it is. But, you know, I think ultimately, you know, like I said, the most powerful component is the love piece. And I think once you use that as the driving force, it does make it a lot easier to just kind of do even more. I'm in the process of feeding families right now. So we're putting food baskets together. We're not able to do as many as we've done in previous years, but, you know, we're still able to kind of do some food baskets. And, you know, just going to the hospital, I know financially or, you know, a crisis or no crisis, the kids are still going to be there. So the need is still going to be there, essentially. And it's just going and just giving, you know, getting away from all the chaotic lifestyle that we are so accustomed to and just go and just give of yourself.
What was your grandfather's name?
Willie.
Willie what?
Willie Lange. Senior.
He started this, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he started. My grandparents both and my parents all take credit. I give them all credit, basically.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Happy holiday to
you. Likewise.
Kenny Lange is a mental health specialist. He joined us here at the studios of NPR West. This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. Here's another listener favorite from 2008. Glenn Turman may not be a name you'll readily put a face with, but chances are you'll know him when you see him. Turman is a true veteran of stage and screen, and to give you an idea of how long he's been at it, consider this. He got his start at age 12 when he landed a role in the original stage production of Lorraine Hansberry's A Raisin in the Sun. Well, this year, Glenn Turman was nominated for an Emmy. It is the first of his career. He got the nod for his portrayal of a man in need of therapy in the HBO drama In Treatment.
You know, it always puzzled me, the whole process here, you know, that a person is in therapy at all often is never discussed, who the doctor is, what he's there for, how much it costs. Funny thing is that it's secrecy or misunderstandings, things never spoken, that usually land people in therapy in the first place. Isn't that ironic?
I don't think it's about secrecy. I think it's about creating an environment where people can come and feel safe to talk about anything.
Safer than with their loved ones?
Well, sometimes it's easier to talk to somebody who's totally uninvolved in your life, somebody objective, somebody who has no stake in it.
You mean like a prostitute? Hmm? Someone who's paid for their intimacy and their discretion? A man should have someone to talk to who cares about him, not someone who charges by the hour.
Man, look at that smile on your face. You know, this is your first Emmy nomination after being in the business all these years. Does it matter that it's taken this long for this kind of recognition to finally come your way?
Well, it's actually great that at this late date, there's something that is making me so excited about being in this business.
Well, that's a good way of looking at it. You know, tell me about the show and your role that you've been nominated for.
Well, HBO has as part of its roster going into its second season now, a show called In Treatment, starring Gabriel Byrne. Wonderful, wonderful show, taken actually from a series that has long been running in Israel. And so they've made it, adopted it to an American audience, cast it with all American actors, except, of course, for Gabriel, who is Irish. But he plays a psychologist, and it's really just the two of them, he and whatever patient that is, or in some cases a couple, in the room, and we follow their treatment. My son, in this case, is played by the great Blair Underwood, and I say that with confidence that the others view him the same way.
You have worked in the theater, you've done film, you've done television. I'm sure you were asked this a number of times. Do you have a preference?
I'm a stage actor, you know. I cut my teeth on stage, you know, so I've always had a love affair with the stage, first off, what I was raised in, you know.
Man, cutting your teeth on the stage, you really did that, the role of Travis Younger in Lorraine Hansberry's A Raisin in the Sun, starring at that time in your production when you were only 12, Sidney Poitier, Ruby Dee, Diana Sands. That must have been an experience that you can only really appreciate later on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You hit it right on the head. To the point of where I've written a one-man show entitled Moving Man. The foundation of this one-man show is viewing that experience from the viewpoint of a young 12-year-old boy who was just thrown into this mix. And so that experience was just remarkable and has influenced my life.
Is there something that you learned, Glenn, from performing at that time, at that young age, that you carry with you still today?
Well, working with the professionals that I was working with at that time, and you name them, you know, I think maybe Lou Gossett has to be added, as well as Ivan Dixon, John Fiedler, Bea Richards. These wonderful people, all a part of this cast, and they were all professionals. They all took their craft very, very seriously. Now, I wasn't able to put my finger on that at that time, but being directed by Lloyd Richards, who had the reins of this wonderful cast, I saw what it was to be a professional and how important that whole thing was. So I really have always carried that regard for the craft with me.
You know, one of the things that I think about when I see your name or see you on screen, and I'm sure for black folks, at least a number of them, the movie Coolie High is one that we just can't forget, because it was a coming-of-age film at a time when black films were coming-of-age themselves. Do people still come up to you about that?
Almost every day.
No kidding.
Three generations has been. I can't believe it.
Wow. That was 1975.
Yeah, 1975, and I still get from, you know, I still get people, youngsters today, talking about Preach, as well as people from back in the day, you know, still regarding me as Preach.
Why don't you get out of here?
Wow. Hey, Brownie. Yeah, I like sonnets from the Portuguese. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. Yeah, this is dynamite.
You like poetry?
Oh, yeah, this is pretty.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, girl. Were I Pygmalion or God, I would make you exactly as you are in every dimension. From your warm hair to your intimate toes, would you be wholly in your own image? I would change nothing, add, or take away. Yeah, that's dynamite. And that poem fits you too, you know? Yeah, it really fits you. Yeah, I'm gonna give you that. As soon as I steal a copy.
Looking back over the decades that you have been an actor, are black actors getting the roles now, getting enough roles, and the roles that black actors do get, are they better now?
Well, yes, I would say so. In terms of better, I would say just a wider range. What was one of the problems always was the fact that for instance, in the black exploitation, a lot of films got sort of a bad rap. But it was only because it was being one side of our experience, the black experience, was being shown. The big problem was that there wasn't enough variety. So I'd say now that the films that are being shown have a great deal more dimension, which allows for some of the more derogatory type of characters to be taken less seriously, or to be less representative of we as a people.
I've got to go back and talk a little bit about the Emmys as we bring this to a close, and I appreciate your coming in. First of all, you're up against some pretty stiff competition.
Whoa.
Charles Durning, Stanley Tucci, Oliver Platt, Robin Williams, Robert Morris. I mean, man, if you had to pick a category and go get your first Emmy nomination, you pick them. Doozy.
You're right. But I'm just honored that to be included in that company, Tony. I mean, gosh, these cats, you know, these are the boys, you know, and there's not a slacker among the group, you know. Mm-mm. And I'm just honored to be included in that group.
So I hesitate to ask you this, but do you have your acceptance speech ready, or is that bad luck? Do you even talk about that?
if you're going to believe in luck, believe in good luck. So,
okay.
So I wouldn't say it was bad luck. I don't have anything ready. I can't lie and say I haven't tossed some words around in my head.
You just know? In case,
just
right?
In case.
Well, we will certainly be watching and wishing the best for you, Glenn Turman.
Thank you, Tony.
The role is Alex Prince Sr. The show is In Treatment by HBO, and you are up for Outstanding Guest Star.
Yes.
Good luck, bro.
Thank you, Tony.
Here's another listener favorite from 2008.
Now to a true rags-to-riches story. Tasha Smith grew up poor in Camden, New Jersey. She and her twin sister were raised by their mother, who struggled with a drug addiction. Then Tasha started using drugs and hanging out with the wrong crowd. At 18, she moved to Los Angeles to start over. She worked her way up the ranks of stand-up comedy, and now she's making a name for herself in Hollywood. If you don't know her face, you probably know her voice. Here she is starring in Tyler Perry's film Why Did I Get Married as the boozy tell-it-like-it-is Angela.
I'm sick of dealing with your ghetto baby mama.
Do you mind?
Excuse us.
And what the hell are you talking about, do you mind? Y'all ain't never seen black people on a train? You ain't never heard of the Underground Railroad?
It's like we got a ghetto Harriet Tubman.
Ooh, let my people go. You heard me?
Snap.
She's drunk.
Yeah, we can tell.
Probably a 40.
Malt liquor.
Mm. You always have to embarrass me.
Look at you, Marcus. You are an embarrassment, okay?
Could you lay off of that for a while?
Could you go to hell for a while?
Already there.
Tasha, it's great to meet you.
Thank you.
So people can't see you, but you look fabulous and glamorous, and you look calm, unlike your character in the last Tyler Perry movie. I'm sure people must come up to you and say, you're a lot nicer in real life.
They do. Like, that's my alter ego. Mm-hmm. Angela was my, you know, I think every woman has an Angela on the inside of them that they would love to let out if they could. And if there were no repercussions. Okay.
Right, right.
So I had fun playing Angela.
What did you like about her?
I loved how open and forward and aggressive and tough and fearless Angela was. I loved how she said everything that everyone was thinking. And I mean, she's a strong, wonderful, full of life, full of energy black woman.
We got a chance to talk to Janet Jackson and Tyler Perry while they were promoting the film, and they both said how much they loved working as an ensemble. What was it like working together with that cast? So many great people.
Can I tell you that they spoiled me? I don't know if you saw The Corner. I'm going to digress a little. But when I had done The Corner and while we were researching the characters, every time we talked to a person that was addicted to heroin, they said it's always, you know, they're always trying to go back to get the first hit. That's how I feel about Why Did I Get Married? I feel like every job I've had, I'm always trying to get the first hit of Why Did I Get Married? Because the cast was so amazing.
You bring up a drug metaphor out of one of your roles, but you also started out on a pretty rocky path. Mm-hmm. You didn't come into acting out of, you know, X, Y, and Z after school program and a silver spoon in your mouth.
No.
Tell us a little bit about some of the challenges that you faced growing up.
Although I did do drugs growing up, but I guess every person that does drugs has that same, they ask me to go to rehab and you say no, no, no mentality. Or you act as if you got high, but you weren't as bad as a crackhead or you weren't as bad as a heroin addict. But, you know, you smoke weed every day and sniff cocaine every day, but I'm not really a drug addict like they were, you know. It's the same thing, really, at the end of the day. Although I can't necessarily recall the feeling of, I got to get back to the first hit, you know. It wasn't that experience for me. Grew up in a very rough neighborhood, you know, drugs, alcohol, prostitution, you know what I'm saying? Just that urban ghetto, I got to make money however I can lifestyle. And it is a blessing that I've gotten a new opportunity in life to be restored, to be able to become something positive, to be able to have a platform, to be an influence to other people that may be living in that environment right now, that I could come in and encourage and inspire them to know no matter what your current circumstances are, they will change if you have a dream.
How does acting bring out different phases of the human experience?
Wow, I got to tell you, like, acting changed my life. I say God and then acting. Because becoming an actor, I've gained a new respect for humanity. And I believe that it's also helped me to grow as a person. It's been one of the biggest blessings and expressions that I could have ever been gifted with.
I want to talk about what you do with actors. You've got the Tasha Smith Actors Workshop. Tell us about the techniques you use, who you work with. Why do you like teaching?
My teacher, who is Ivana Chubbuck, who has been my teacher and mentor, she took a lot of time to really lay some wonderful foundation and technique in how I approach my work. And in going through that process, I've learned how to confront my life and how to not necessarily suppress everything that I've experienced, but just use it and look at it as an experience that will allow me to be able to identify with something within every character. So what we try to do in TESOL, which is Tasha Smith Actors Workshop, is to help the actor get to the core of who they really are and how they really feel. So we may have them do a dump where you just basically express everything that you feel like you have not been able to express, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. The freedom that we can get through the art of acting is priceless. And I just enjoy helping people get there. I enjoy encouraging and inspiring people to pursue their purpose in the arts, to help cultivate and develop their instrument, and to know I had a part with helping someone change their life. Because if they cultivate their instrument and allow themselves to be developed, guess what? Their life is going to change because they're going to get success.
Where I'd love to leave it is, your family had such hard times in the past, and now, in addition to your personal success, it sounds like everyone has been lifted up. Tell me a little bit about how your family's doing.
My family is doing great. My mom, first of all, is on her 20th year clean. She is a sponsor to many people that are coming off of drugs, that are in the midst of their battles that she's overcome. She is the bomb. Okay, we're actually going to be working on some books together and doing a tour, a mother-daughter tour, to be able to empower people whose parents may have been addicted to drugs and the children who are dealing with their parents that have been addicted to drugs. My sisters are amazing. My sister is my business partner, my twin. She's an amazing producer, writer. You know, we're just grinding and trying to make my mother proud as well as God.
Tasha, it's been so great talking to you.
Thank you for your time.
Actress and acting instructor Tasha Smith. You can hear more about her acting career and how she found God on our website, nprnewsandnotes.org.
I'm Tony Cox, and this is News and Notes. Here's another listener favorite from 2008.
From the comedy stage to the big screen to television, Niecy Nash brings sass and style to everything she does.
I am here at the CMA Music Festival. It is where the biggest country stars come to perform and meet their fans. I'm going in.
This is my bus right here you're looking at.
It's 1955 right here.
1955? Does that mean I have to sit in the back? I'm Niecy Nash, and I am backstage at the Kimora Lee Simmons Baby Bat Fashion Show. Oh, I'm going in. What is the one thing they don't have back here that they need? Ha! That's how I do it. Who want a donut? I'm Niecy Nash, and this is Clean House.
The actress and comedian shines when she's working without a script. She is starring in two TV shows at once, Reno 911 and the home makeover show Clean House. Nash recently sat down with NPR's Tony Cox to talk about her career and how she got into the biz.
man, like so many other people who do this genre of entertainment, was birthed out of tragedy. When I was, I want to say 15 or 16, I saw my mother get shot.
Oh.
And then maybe the day before my 22nd, or 23rd birthday, my brother was killed. And so my family had experienced so much tragedy. And by the time my brother was killed, my mother, who had survived her incident, she was like in a horrible depression. So she's like, I'm getting in the bed and I'm never getting back up. And she meant it. So I'm coming to her house every day and I'm standing at the foot of the bed telling jokes and stories and trying to pop lock and cabbage patch and, you know, trying to work it out. And eventually she went from laying down in the bed to sitting up in the bed. So, well, I've got my peanuts and my water. Go on and stand up there and do your rendition of things. So one day I go to her house and she's not in the bed. I'm like, where's my mother? And I look and she's like, we're in here. I'm like, who is we? Well, I went across the street and I got the neighbors and I told them you was funny. Stand up there. Y'all are going to love this. I'm like, what? So I'd start performing in the living room. That was
how it started.
And then I didn't want to be selfish. I realized in that moment that comedy was a gift. And so when I went outside and I said, I'm Niecy Nash and I'm funny, they were like, you're right. Get over here. We will give you a job.
Really? Now, you know, it's one thing to perform for your mama and the neighbors.
Yeah.
It's another thing to perform for the people that are going to put money in your purse.
Well, and I got to do that. I want to eat.
So how hard was it when you really stepped on to the professional stage?
It was a journey. It took some time, but I always believed that impression that had been pressed onto the canvas of my imagination. Like, this is what you are called to do. Pow, it was stamped right there. And so since I always believed it, when I walked that thing out, I never felt like there was another option.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be the only one taking three babies to an audition, but you know what? No matter what. I live by the no matter what of it all. So I would take my three babies, pack them up, and I would do what I got to do.
Now, you started out doing stand-up, but then you have moved away from stand-up into situation comedy.
Yes.
You like this better?
I like work.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah. Actually, I booked Reno 911 and Clean House, which is my home makeover show that I host, the same week. That following week, I booked Recurring on Bernie Mac. So it kind of all happened at the same time.
You got two TV show series and a recurring role on another series in the same week?
Uh-huh. Within about 2 weeks.
How'd you do that?
The man upstairs was feeling sorry for me. He was like, let me let this baby catch a break.
I heard that one of the auditions that you went into, you took your children and they were taking too long.
Oh, that was for Reno 911.
Tell us that story.
I went to the audition for Reno. The funny thing about that is that when I got that phone call, originally it wasn't improv that we were going to do. It was sketch. And they called and said, you know, can you do characters? I was like, yes. I had never done them. I was like, but let me, what is a paycheck is attached on the end of it? I'm going to figure it out in the car on the way there. So I lied and said I knew how to do it. But when I got there, they were running late. And I said, wait a minute. And so I went and knocked on the door, and it was maybe 15 people in the room. And I was like, are y'all about to get this dog and pony show started? And they were like, well, are you in a hurry? And I'm like, yeah, I got to get my kids to Chuck E. Cheese by 7 o'clock. And so I think they ended up hiring me. I don't even think I was the best girl, to be honest. But I do think that I was the most comfortable in my skin. And somehow that resonated. And they were like, get over here. We want to work with you.
You know, I want to talk about being comfortable in your skin, okay? Because I saw you in a blue swimsuit that was really thongish.
I was waiting on the T word. Thong. I was waiting on you to hit me with that.
You were rocking that thong, and you weren't even at the beach.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
When they decided to switch from doing a sketch show to a unscripted parody of Cops for Reno 911, we all got to create our cop characters. My daughter's best friend at the time was Rainisha Williams. And I was like, can I be Rainisha Williams? And they were like, well, yeah, okay, so what about her? And I was like, can I have baby hair and a big booty? And they were like, yes. So when you see the Rainisha booty, it's a prosthetic booty, but the foundation is mine.
Underneath is you.
Yes.
You are too crazy. Let's talk about somebody that you worked with who was really respected in the business, Bernie Mac.
Yes.
I had the opportunity to meet him myself once. A great guy. And you had an arc on his show, The Bernie Mac Show. And I've already told you that one of those episodes when you blew in with the Santa Ana wind story, I thought that was one of the funniest episodes they had. What was your relationship with Bernie?
When I came to the audition, there was a million women there who had had series and, you know, auditioning to play his sister. It got down to the callback. And when I went back to the callback, it was only me and one other woman. And I go in and I have the little sides. And right before I walked in the door, the lady said, honey, we don't need the sides. You're going to just improv a scene with Bernie. And I said, I'm sorry, what did you say?
Can you repeat that?
And so I walked in. He was there. How you doing? I said, how you doing? And I just took my shoes off and sat down, and we started talking. And he said, the script is not the Bible. I got mine. I want you to get yours. Do you, and I'll follow. Yes, everybody knows him as a king of comedy, but the man who he was, just he was a king. He himself, Bernie Mac, not just a king of comedy, but just a king to me anyway.
That was a great opportunity for you, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
You know, I look at you and I see your, this is your signature look, isn't it?
With the flower in your hair,
yeah.
Yes.
It's cute.
Thank you.
Is that what the brothers tell you? They say you're cute?
I don't even think they see the flower. For everything else.
They can't get you the
outer wrappings are going to do what they're going to do. You know what I mean? And it's always going to be somebody who like it.
Well, you're right about that. You know what you should do, Niecy Nash?
What should I do?
You should write a book, and it should be called Happy in My Skin.
Happy in My Skin. You heard it here first.
If you do it, when they say, I want to thank somebody, just say, I want to thank Tony Cox at News & Notes for giving me the title of my book.
How about that?
Okay? You don't have to give me any money. I don't want any money, but we can talk about that later. Thank you, Niecy.
Thank you for having me at News & Notes.
Here's another listener favorite from 2008.
Now we've got some holiday cheer, soulful cheer. For many of us, there's nothing that puts you in the spirit like Christmas music. You've got the classics from Nat King Cole and Bing Crosby, the comedy of the Chipmunks, but you have never had Aretha Franklin until now. The new album, This Christmas Aretha, features classic and contemporary songs infused with Miss Franklin's trademark R&B, soul, and gospel styles. I got a chance to talk to the Queen of Soul about one of her favorite passions, that's cooking, and her new foray into holiday music.
Christmas is so special for so many reasons. Each time it comes around, you hear very, very little on me. I'm not in the mix. And it's such a special time, as I said. You know, get the picture. The snow is softly falling. You've got a nice warm fire going. Maybe you're holding hands with your sweetie next to the fire, or maybe you got a lot of good pots on the stove in the kitchen, and all of that, you know, the good smells are wafting through the house, and the bells ringing, people are gift giving, and the music is going, and there's nothing on Aretha, please. I gotta record some Christmas music.
So what's your favorite song on this? I mean,
My favorite song, the whole album is my favorite. But my really, really, really favorite one is The Lord Will Make a Way and Angels We Have Heard on High.
Yeah.
All right, couple other things. You were named number one vocalist of the rock era by Rolling Stone magazine.
I heard that.
How does that make you feel?
Oh, please. If I'm not careful, I might not be able to get out the doorway. My head might get caught in the doorway. It's a tremendous honor. It really is. And I am most appreciative for it.
It sounds like you don't, but do you ever get blasé about all the things that you've done and all the times people tell you that they love your work and that kind of appreciation either from critics or from fans?
Oh, absolutely not. It's that's a good thing, and I'm delighted to hear it all the time. It's when you don't hear it, there's a problem. So I'm delighted to hear it all the time. It's a continuing acknowledgement of my work, and that means an awful lot to me.
I admit that I'm a huge holiday fan, and I come from a family with a lot of serious traditions and also people who are serious cooks.
Yes,
and you
so am I.
Are a serious cook, and on this album, you have this whole conversation about your holiday cooking, and you talk about how the chitlins almost killed you, so you weren't making them again. Now, do you mean health-wise you're not going to make chitlins anymore?
No, chitlins are out, and they are off the menu, and anything like chitlins for me. A, they were keeping my weight up, and B, they run your pressure up and things like that, so chitlins have been canceled off of my list, and I know my fans and friends are screaming hallelujah.
Since we know what's off the list, the chitlins are off the list, you have to give us a list of two or three things you think you're going to make as a cook over the holiday season.
Okay. Two or three things I'm going to make: baked chicken and dressing for sure. I'm going to do mixed greens, turnips and mustards. I'm going to do an ambrosia the way my grandmother used to make it. And you said just a few things.
I'm loving this. The Queen of Soul thing could also apply to the Queen of Soul food thing, because when you told us last time that you had made oxtails while you were cooking on your bus, I was like, now that is a woman who has some dedication to cooking. Let me just ask, how do you make your greens? What do you put, meat or no meat? And
actually, this time I'm going to use some smoked turkey. I hear that that is really, really wonderful. But after cleaning them, because, you know, greens are so gritty and so dirty, you have to clean them first, of course, before you put them on. One of the ladies from the church who took care of us when we were children taught me a long time ago. She said, just put a little bit of a teaspoon, maybe like a half a teaspoon of maybe soap powder in your greens, like something like sheer.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding you. That's how dirty they are.
So just when you're rinsing them, I was like, you cannot put that in the
pot. When you're cooking them in the sink, just put that in there with it. And then, you know, you're working with it with your hands and everything and working that grit out of those greens. Listen, you won't believe how much dirt and grit comes out of those greens.
Okay,
and all of that. And you rinse them so many times until they're just sparkling and can't be cleaner. And then I just, of course, put them on top of the ham hocks with some crushed red peppers and a little bit of garlic powder. I like that.
I think about the areas that you and I are from, Michigan and Maryland, and in some ways right now we're going through these incredibly tough economic times, and it's not going to be a very comfortable holiday for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right.
I know that you do a lot of philanthropic work. How does the work that you do that we might not know so much about intersect with people's lives who are trying to just make a way out of no way?
I donate heavily to the church and various churches in the Detroit community and food banks. So that's just some of what I do.
Now, we've talked about food and health, but you may also be saving people's lives, because there's this new study out that says that listening to music produces endorphins that then lower your blood pressure.
Like laughter, right?
Exactly.
I can believe that. I absolutely believe that. Depends on what you're listening to. It's calming, it's soothing. You know, they say music soothes the savage beast, right?
Absolutely.
But music can do a lot of things. It transcends a lot of barriers.
What are you looking forward to?
I am waiting for a rewrite on the script for my autobiography, and just getting ready for the holidays.
Well, Aretha Franklin, it is always great to talk to you and have our wide-ranging conversations. So if I don't personally get to see you over the holiday season, I wish the best to you and yours.
Okay, Farai, same to you.
Hang on a mistletoe, I'm gonna get
That was the Queen of Soul, Miss Aretha Franklin, talking about her new holiday CD, This Christmas, Aretha.
That's our show for today. Thanks for sharing your time with us. To listen to the show or subscribe to the podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. To join the conversation or sign up for the newsletter, visit our blog at nprnewsandviews.org. News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Tomorrow, we continue our listener favorite series with a look at the evolution of Latin jazz and the next generation of experimental hip-hop. I'm Tony Cox. This is News and Notes. Merry Christmas. My world is filled with cheer and you.